From the center of the universe, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, this is the SDM Show with your host, Rob Cairns. The SDM Show focuses on business, life, productivity, digital marketing, WordPress, and more. Sit back, relax, grab your favorite drink, and enjoy the show. Here is Rob.
Hey, everybody. I'm Rob Cairns. I'm the founder, CEO, and chief creator of Amazing Ideas at Stunning Digital Marketing. In this podcast, I sit down with Kristen Raber of WP Chill. We talk about agency life and WordPress design and development. Grab a drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation. This episode of the SDM Show is sponsored by Stunning Digital Marketing, the agency to handle all your WordPress website security needs. Go on over to stunningdigitalmarketing.com and find out how we can help you secure your website so you no longer have an issue with backups being hacked or your website being compromised. That's stunningdigitalmarketing.com. Hey, everybody. Rob Cairns here. And in today's podcast, I'm here with my guest, Kristen Raber of WP Chill. How are you today?
Oh, absolutely fine. Amazing. A bit excited to be on your show.
It's great to have you. And you're coming to us from the other side of the world where WordCamp Europe just happened, correct?
Yeah, exactly. I'm currently living in Lisbon, and we just had WordCamp Europe in Porto. So that's like 300 kilometers away from where I'm currently living.
Yeah, so it's great to have you. So I always like to start the podcast and ask people, what is your WordPress origin story? How did you get into WordPress?
I got into WordPress, I think, close to 12 years ago. So initially, I didn't start with WordPress particularly. Just started with SEO work. I think actually the story goes back even more. Like I think I was 16 or 17 years old. And, you know, as any teenager, I was bored at home. I just had an internet connection, no money. And what I decided to do at that time was, you know, figure out a way to see if I could make any money from home. 17 years ago, this was very exotic for a country like Romania, the country I'm from. And I remember I Googled for like 3 days and read every single article I could find on how to make money from home. I made money online. It was very, very new. And I think WordPress was still like the best possible solution and the easiest to use even back then to create a website. And for a long time, I built websites and ranked them on Google and just made money off of AdSense. But I never knew how to customize them or build a custom theme or like touch any of the code. I only worked with the user interface, the backend stuff, but the user interface, you know, building menus, displaying widgets. That was pretty much it. I was testing plugins all the time because I was always looking for one that I could get it working exactly the way I needed. I needed it to work. And later down the road, I decided to start an agency with one of my friends. And we wanted to start an agency, like a local agency that offered marketing services. So that's SEO, AdWords, social media promotion, that kind of stuff. And we were struggling to gain any traction on the market. And one day we landed a web development project. We had to build a website for a local kindergarten. And they wanted us to work on the project because they worked with us in the past on marketing, and they were super happy with the work we did for them. And they insisted, like, I kept telling them, like, guys, I've never developed a website before from scratch. I don't know how to do it. We're like, you'll figure it out. And so I did. It took me like 2 weeks to figure out and learn CSS, HTML, like the basics of WordPress and theming. And that was my first WordPress theme I built like 12 years ago, I think. It was, you know, when I look back at it, it was awful in terms of best practices. Old HTML code was put in page content. CSS was there as well, and there was no best practices applied anywhere. I don't even think we had an external CSS file at that point. And we kept doing this for like 5 or 6 years more. But as any business owner who's been in this business for long enough, you'll see at some point that they simply become unsatisfied with agency work. Like, you'll have to deal with clients. It's not easily scalable. It's now we have productized services. Back then, like 12 years ago, this was still very new on the market. And I think it was right around the time one highly popular WordPress theme was making waves in the space. It's called Zerif. And they were just making huge splashes. They were making a lot of money, and they were posting a lot of transparency reports, income reports, whatever, showing how much money you were making. And here I was, you know, building themes for clients for a very, very small amount of money every single project. And there was these guys, you know, doing the same thing, but making a lot more money than we were. So we looked into it and we were like, well, let's give this a try. Let's see what happens. And I remember to this day that the first theme I built and uploaded on WordPress.org, between the time it was uploaded and between the time it was actually approved, it took like 5 more months. And during those 5 months, I committed 46 versions of that theme. It's exactly how little I knew actually about building WordPress themes, custom WordPress themes for a market, for an audience. And that's how much effort it took to learn all this stuff. I knew nothing about like translating themes, escaping all those best practices, build process, like everything was new to me at the point. And once it got approved, 2 or 3 months, we were climbing the WordPress.org popular tab for themes. We were just climbing and climbing, and we were seeing like sales go up and up and up, and we're like, yeah, this is, market's loving us. Market loves our product. And we went out to hire people. We hired like 3 people full time, and we started thinking about our new product lineup. Like, we had more products in the pipeline. And after like 3 or 4 months, the WordPress themes team decided to change the way they rank themes in the popular tab. And they changed the algorithm in such a way that it only, you know, it prioritized older themes. Like, you needed to have an active install account, which is kind of the way it works today as well. Mm-hmm. But we were such a new theme on the market. We had almost no active installs. Like, we had a bunch, but we hadn't had enough time to, you know, build a huge install base like older themes. And here we were, 3 months in, we thought we found success. We hired like 3 people or 4 by now. These people just quit their jobs to join us. We were super excited about launching new products. We were, you know, stretched and trying to gain as much as possible of the market space. And here we were with a business that was taking off like a rocket, and just one night, and they changed the way the algorithm works, we saw our entire earnings drop almost overnight by 80-90%.
Wow.
Yeah, that is a huge blow. And we had to default to what we already knew how to do. So we defaulted to agency work again. And we reached out to people in the space who are still doing well with themes, and try to convince them to build themes for them. And we found like 3 people who were willing to do this with us. And we did this for another 3 or 4 years, I think. And I remember we saved like an entire year's of profit to buy our first plugin, which is Modula. This is Modula Image Gallery. As the name says, it allows you to build nice image galleries for your WordPress website. And we acquired this plugin and was listed on Flipboard at the time. You know, we had a lot of concerns about it because Flippa doesn't necessarily have a reputation for bringing together the best possible sellers and buyers. But we bought it. And for a year and a half, we just stared at it. We just let it sit there because we had no experience with plugins. It was so different than themes back then. We didn't know what to do with it. This was like 5 years ago tops. And we just let it sit there for another year and a half. And then I remember we spent like a year bringing one of Modula's most popular features even today, just called the custom grids. Basically, a tool that allows you to drag images by their corners and, you know, build a grid in any ratio you want. So imagine you've shot a few images in portrait and a few images in landscape. You'd like a gallery to display the images exactly in this ratio you shot them. What most gallery plugins on the market currently do is they squish down your images to a known format. They use Masonry for this. That's it. So you lose, you know, the detail that you spend so much time capturing with your camera. There's a reason why you shot that image in portrait mode. You wanted to capture. You think that's the best way to display your work. And we spent an entire year building this in a bubble. We had no idea if the market's going to like it or not. Back then, we didn't think of like, hey, let's go out and ask people if this is something they need. And once we launched it, people were like, wow, this is amazing. No one ever has fixed this problem before. And like, after like 2 or 3 years, we realized why no one fixed it. It's such a complicated problem to fix, and it's still giving us headaches after 3 years.
Yeah.
It's you know, I think those other people knew why they didn't want to do it. We didn't, so we did it. And now we have to, you know, carry this entire technical debt with us, but we're working on it, and there's even bigger stuff coming along. And
image gallery plugins seem to be like the bane of everybody's existence, right? Everybody's got different ideas on how to display images. We all know if images are too big or not displayed properly, they kill the speed on your WordPress website, right? And that's, you know, part of the issue there. I don't know about you, but I subscribe to the theory that images on a website better be 100K or less in space, or they're way too big, personally. Because
I actually fixed that as well.
How did you fix it?
So we realized that photographers are more in love with high detail in their images, that they're never going to compromise an image size or image quality, right? And it's very difficult to convince an artist that they have to reduce their images to make their site load faster. They'd rather have a slow loading website with like all the detail there. That's their pride. And I kept thinking about this, like, how could I fix this for them without asking them to resize their images or compress them in any way?
Yep.
And then I realized we could partner with an image optimization service and throw a CDN into the mix as well. So we've built an extension that's called SpeedUp that with a simple toggle just takes your entire gallery, runs it through ShortPixel's API, then offloads it to StackPath's CDN. And on the front end, everything's going to load extremely fast without any visible loss in quality. You get like 90% reduction in image size, but you don't see any compromise on the image quality.
So that kind of brings me to my next question, and that is, you know, we're talking about speed, and we all know in the WordPress space in the last couple of years, we've had the discussion of page builders versus Gutenberg, which for all intents and purposes is a page builder. Call it what you want. I believe Gutenberg is a built-in page builder. And we've seen some different speed things go on there between the page builders and using native Gutenberg. Do you or your company have any direction on whether you prefer a page builder or Gutenberg because of speed, or are you kind of indifferent?
So when it comes to our own websites, we obviously have a preference because we prefer building in Gutenberg, mostly because this is where WordPress is going with like core. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big believer that, you know, I think this is called dogfooding. You have to work with the product you're building products for. Yep. So, you know, I'm a huge believer in this, that we have to be using Gutenberg no matter how clunky it can be sometimes. And it's gotten way better in the past 2.5 years or so. But I'm still a firm believer in this. And all of our websites are built on blocks and block-enabled themes. But when it comes to our clients, we never force them to choose. Like every time we build a block, we always make sure that we're going to build a Gutenberg block, an Elementor widget, a Breezy custom widget, a Beaver Builder one. Like try to cover as much as possible of the page builder space without compromising on it. At the end of the day, the customer should be able to choose what they prefer. They've invested in this ecosystem. They've learned how to use it. And, you know, I don't think it's fine for us to take a stance and go like, well, no, if you don't use Gutenberg, then sorry, just look for another solution.
I think it's at the point where, and you and I were talking about this earlier in the week, that I always say to people say to me, what should I use? And my response is use what you know how to use well. Like I'm not the typical WordPress person who's in one camp or the other. I will say all my development now is in Gutenberg, but that's a personal choice. And I've gone all in with basically a Cadence stack and for a long time. And I've gone all in with the only other add-on I'm running is Editor Plus by Extendify. And that's probably about it. But that's because I've made that choice. I mean, if somebody can spin out sites with Beaver Builder or Elementor, frankly, I don't see at this point for stuff they're doing to change what they're doing, because they can spin those sites out pretty quickly and it's a learning curve. And that's what people don't realize.
No, I agree. And I think one of the issues here is that it took WordPress so long to release their own tool. Like, it took them so long to release Gutenberg that other solutions gained enough popularity and people invested a lot of time, effort, and resources. Like, they created communities around these products.
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to see add-ons for Beaver Builder plugins, add-ons for Elementor, add-ons for, you know, insert name of page builder here. And people have spent a lot of time learning these tools. And then Gutenberg comes along and changes the way we think about page builders completely. We don't have so for example, for the longest time, Elementor had a concept of rows, right?
Yep.
With newer CSS technologies, you don't need rows. And rows were such a huge part in columns of the grid as we know it as developers, like for many, many, many years. And people slowly learned that. And then comes Gutenberg along and changes the way we look at a page in a lab. And I think they're slowly adapting to the change. But as we all know, change is hard. And change takes a lot of effort and time.
It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of resources. And it takes learning. And it's not that the change is bad. It's just getting people there. So for somebody new entering the WordPress ecosystem, they're probably going to jump into Gutenberg more easily than a page builder. And I was kind of thinking back the other day after we talked, and I remember some of the early frameworks. So we'll go back to things like Genesis, Thesis, Headway Themes. I was an early adopter of Headway, which is no longer around, which in essence had their own block-based system, but they were like miles ahead of the acceptance level of the community, like miles ahead. And sometimes that hurts people. And I think what we need to do in the WordPress space is stop arguing over blocks versus page builders, because honestly, Gutenberg's here to stay, whether you like it or not, and start worrying about how can we make the ecosystem better for everybody instead of all this, what I call little children fighting in a playground.
No, I agree completely with this. As my previous mention was that a lot of people were so invested in these ecosystems, you know, they're trying to hold on to their investments for as long as possible. And they're trying, some of these people, you might see them in communities around on the internet, on Facebook groups or LinkedIn groups or any other place where people gather in groups and discuss ideas, is you're going to see these people being really loud about their preference. They're going to try and convince everyone like, no, this is the best one. This is, you should be using this. And when you start digging into it, you realize that most of the time, these people have been invested in that ecosystem for a very long time. Don't want to move away, right? They're trying to bring in as many people or keep as many people there as possible. In a way, I think they're just seeing, they're observing their entire market share shrinking visibly, because at the end of the day, it's nearly impossible to compete with the default option, right? As much as you'd like to. Maybe Elementor's got a chance now with Elementor Cloud, and that offering is very solid. But otherwise, I personally don't see the other players in the space being able to compete for that long.
No, it's true. I mean, and I don't know how much people have been watching, but there's now a new Tumblr. And those who don't know, Tumblr is now owned by Automattic, the parent company to WordPress. And Tumblr is now rolling out their backend, which sits on what else? Gutenberg. So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of that going on, and people just need to be aware of it and decide which sandbox they want to play in. And that's kind of the beauty of open source. You can choose the sandbox you want to play
in. I completely agree with this. And, you know, the more I look at it, the more I see that sandboxes, some of them are shrinking and some of them are growing. I'm not going to name them exactly, but to anyone else who's listening to this, it's easy to figure it out. And my personal take on this is, I think, you know, we had this same issue in the past when the Customizer was launched. I don't know how many people listening currently remember. Yeah, we had the exact same reaction from the community. Like, everyone was like, oh, we don't want this. This is horrible. This is, you know, we don't like it. You're forcing us into something so new, so useless. And then time passed and you started slowly seeing themes building or then customize it. And the more the developers worked on the customizer's code, they added feature after feature after feature, the more the community building themes on top of that code was enjoying it. I'm like, oh, this is actually amazing. So you're going to tell me that I can click this button and I can see almost real-time change on the front end? Oh, that's amazing. So I just now have this framework I have access to that I didn't spend any time building that allows me to sell my services onto clients and go like, yeah, we're going to build you a panel where you can just change stuff and see the change is almost real time on your websites. This is the new way of building websites, right? Yeah. It took me
It's funny, actually, because now they're looking at pulling the customizer out of WordPress with FSD, with full site entity, and the outcry going on in the community.
Yeah. Oh, no, don't take our tool away. Yeah. I know. And, you know, it's another thing is that most people seem to forget that this is open source, right? And it can always change overnight without any, prior announcements like, hey, in 3 years, we're going to retire the customizer. Like if, let's say, Matt would come on a show like 5 years ago and say, hey, we're going to have the customizer for 4 years. That's it. Once we reach the end of that period, we're going to cut it off and we're going to move to something else. You wouldn't have seen such huge adoption, right? And we again see the same trend. People invested in the customers so heavily. Like, hold on. You're taking away my tool. I've spent a lot of time learning this.
Yeah.
Then why are you taking it away?
It's funny when you talk about that, because there, when Gutenberg was announced, there was a WordPress fork called Classic Press that started.
Oh, I remember.
And it's still out there. And I should tell you, there's a well-known WordPress podcaster who every podcast he calls Matt Mullenweg, the beloved dictator, at the start of his podcast. He's a fellow Canadian. He's gotten, so bad that I actually won't listen to him anymore. That bad. Because on one hand, you're making money in the WordPress ecosystem, and the other hand, you're complaining about the WordPress ecosystem. It's kind of a bit of an oxymoron, so to speak. But Classic Press hasn't taken off. Everybody thought 3 years ago, oh, people would revolt. People would want the Classic Editor. People would want to do all the stuff. And I think Classic Press, last I read, is only accounting for 8% of the overall marketplace. So that's not really a lot at the end of the day.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why I think this is happening, and personally, at the time Gutenberg was launched, I was actually looking at Classic Press as well. So considering, I was like, I think we're gonna just use this fork and never update our site in the future again and just keep using this until the end of time. And somehow we just decided against it and just stuck with Gutenberg, and I'm so happy we did that in the end, right? And one of the reasons why I think Classic Press didn't catch on so as well as they expected it to be was because we're still having the Classic Editor as a plugin. So you can always install that, and you've got like the old WordPress. You've got the old WordPress back. Off. Like, people always had the option just installing a new plugin on top of their existing WordPress installation instead of going with something like a fork. And even the Classic Editor plugin was still being maintained by the folks at Automattic. So that's, gives you a little bit more faith that it's going to be around for at least the time they mentioned it'll be, instead of a fork that can go away overnight without any warning. And
It's so true. And I think there's a lot of interesting things to come in the ecosystem. I think Gutenberg's going to take off. I think there's a lot of things under full site editing FSE that's going to take off. There's still some mergers and acquisitions going on in space. And as a plugin developer, you've probably got your eye on what's going on there. The two of the biggest ones being ACF, and then the influx of money made into InstaWP recently by Automattic. So that's interesting.
Yeah. I do have my eyes always on the market, and as a small time, we're still a small team, right? We're like a plugin studio, plugin development studio. We can't compete with people that have got like 100 employees or more. I'm not talking about companies even bigger than that, like Stellar has got 1,000 more employees. Or GoDaddy. It was like, these are the big, really big players in the space. And I'm never surprised with acquisitions. Like, people are always surprised, like, they sold this plugin and they sold it to this company. But you never stop to think, like, how long has this plugin been in the market? What's the story of the CEO? Who's the person running this company? What are his future plans? Mm-hmm. Change is not that bad. Like, people act like changing ownership is such a bad thing. Sure, historically, there have been cases when plugin changing ownership didn't actually lead to that plugin being so much actively developed. But, you know, we'll have to see and wait if this is going to be one of those changes that go for the worst instead for the best. And as a small plugin studio, what I usually look out for is the spaces that are being acquired, because I never want to be in any of those spaces. All the spaces that are being, you know, the plugins that are being gobbled up by the bigger companies are in spaces where the market is growing and it's showing potential. It's going to keep growing like that. Yep. But it's also got like a lot of, you know, money attached to it. And unless you're prepared to go head to head with a company that can put in at least 100 employees behind one of their products and a ton of marketing budget and, you know, a lot of networking connections they've built along the way, not to mention infrastructure and experience running multiple, maybe, companies in the past, which is common for people that are leading hosting companies in the WordPress space right now. Like most of those people have run successfully in the past a lot of businesses and have made successful exits. And unless you're ready to go head to head with this, you better look for other spaces where you can, you know, carve out a small niche for yourself and just, I wouldn't say survive. You can thrive in those spaces. We're thriving. But you're probably going to have to think that you might never build a unicorn of a business in this space. Most of these spaces are just getting crowded and crowded, right? There's always down market opportunity. And that's where I think we should be. That's at least where I want to keep innovating.
No, I would agree with you. And I think we need small plugin shops or niche plugin shops like yours to innovate a little bit. But I also think the market needs some stability. And the only way for some of these plugins to keep their support, because support costs, as you know, are high, and to keep other things going, honestly, for some of these plugins, is to be acquired and to be put into a situation where there's more stability. So for things like that, I look at what GoDaddy did with buying SkyVerge a number of years ago. There's a good example. They picked up over, and what that's led to is GoDaddy offering managed WooCommerce hosting. GoDaddy buying Pagely, which is a niche WooCommerce hosting. Newfold buying Yith and Yoast, and that's put them in an interesting position. And then you've got our friends at Liquid Web with the Stellar brands, buying everything from iThemes, from Corey Miller to Cadence to you name it there. So, you know, there's a lot of movement going around. And I think a lot of people in the community honestly don't like the movement. But I actually think in the long run, some of it, not all of it, but some of it's good for stability.
No, I agree with that completely. You know, you can only grow a plugin so much with limited resources. Yeah. And what most of these acquisitions mean is that once the acquisition is finished and the old owners, you know, either staying on board for the foreseeable future or they're moving on to something else, these plugins can unlock even more growth and expansion for them, because these bigger hosting companies are usually the people who acquire them have access to infinitely more resources than a simple bootstrapped plugin had as a business or could access even as a loan, because that's one of the other things most people in the industry seem to be doing. And with that, you know, with that much exposure, my belief is that these plugins will just continue to get better and better by, you know, the owner being forced to, the new owner being forced to build a better solution that now has to stand the test of, instead, let's say, Yoast's case, right? They had 5 million active installs. Let's just use that as an example. And now suddenly they can expose this plugin to another, let's say, 25 million users. So a plugin that was initially built for a maximum of 5 million people, is now being exposed to another market that's 5 times bigger than it was before. It's just going to unlock new scenarios and where this plugin has never been tested necessarily or hasn't been exposed. That's going to drive more innovation and better ways for more ways for developers to look at the code and see how they can fix this, how can they improve that, how they can make it even better, more scalable, more user-friendly. It's going to unlock a lot of feedback for the product in a very fast pace.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. And it leads to other offerings. Like, for example, let's take GoDaddy and their SkyVerge deal, which is gone into managed WooCommerce hosting. When you sign up for managed WooCommerce hosting with GoDaddy, you actually get all the SkyVerge plugins basically with it. And that is really where the bread and butter is saying, okay, here's your service. And by the way, we're going to give you all this premium stuff built into your hosting to help make your website run. And I think for some people, not everybody, that's an attractive alternative.
Yeah, and it's one step in the right direction of trying to reduce as much as possible of that friction we see for users. Whenever you're competing against a SaaS offering, right? Because when you're building a solution, you reach a point where the market you're competing on is not just the WordPress space, it's the entire internet, it's the entire space, right? And even for image galleries, we've got competition outside of the WordPress space. Even though we're on WordPress, we've got people moving away from other closed source solutions, not going to name them right now, and moving to WordPress, right? And they're like, well, I could do this in the other place. I was building my galleries in this way and this way, and I had these settings, and we ended up with this result. Why can't I do it with your product? Why doesn't WordPress allow me to do this? Yeah. And it's very interesting to look at this, like how little friction these other, at least in the onboarding step, they have as compared to WordPress. Whenever you read an article on WordPress and a plugin, most of the time you'll see this. You need to go to this hosting, sign up on an account, and there's like 25 steps with images. You click here, you do this. Then you have to install WordPress. That's like another 40 steps. Like click here, download this, upload this, go through FTP. By this time,
But it's a lot easier now. I mean, now...
It is, yeah. It's still...
We all remember back in the day, one of the things WordPress advertised was the 5-minute WordPress install.
Oh no, I know. So hold on, I'm getting to that point. I'm you're going to see how I'll end up in the same spot with this idea. So by then, the users are going to be like, 65 steps. I'm 30 minutes in, and I'm still not done. And you're like, install this plugin, right? Click here, upload, activate, enter your license key, buy the plugin, right? And this is very common, especially for small plugin shops like us. This is the entire friction for us. Then come the hosting companies who have access to a user base already, and they figured out how to eliminate a bunch of those other steps. Like, you can almost compete with on a SaaS level and go like, 14-day free trial, just click here today. Yeah. That's how easy they've made it, right, to be. We're on the other hand, we're not able to compete in that space ever. And hosting companies, I think they're just trying to make it easier for users to have an offer on their hosting package. Like, I'm going to find this plugin there, and I know it works specifically with my hosting provider, because that's another huge problem in the space. You never know if the plugin you want to use is going to work on, in your hosting environment, if it's going to work, if it's optimized for that. That's how you ended up with WooCommerce optimized hosting offerings, because not every hosting was able to offer a scalable quality hosting service on this.
Yeah, it's true. So true. And there are some hosts that actually say, we will not allow you to run plugins ABC too.
Oh yeah, of course, of course.
I know certainly WP Engine has a list. I know.
I think all hosting companies nowadays have a list.
Yeah.
I think there's no other. I don't think there's one company today that doesn't have a list of you can't install and here's a bunch of plugins you shouldn't be able to install in this hosting.
Yep. But at least they're being upfront about it versus bearing it. So I don't have personally much of an issue with that.
It's surprising how much of this space is moving into. So there's another conversation we could have around what we think. So that's me and you right now. We think the WordPress space is built of. So it's either built of, it used to be mostly built around developers and agencies working with WordPress, that they would be building the websites for clients and then handing them over. But now we've got a lot more, I'm going to say inexperienced, but when I say inexperienced, I'm going to actually refer to technical skills. So they lack the development chops to pull it off, but they know how to operate stuff like Elementor, Gutenberg, watch a bunch of YouTube videos, piece information together, and actually deliver a website at the end of the day. Well, at the end of the week, actually. And I think there's a growing market of these people instead of, it's the do-it-yourself people, kind of people who just accept the challenge of building their website in 24 hours or, 6 hours, 8 hours, how much time it's going to take, depending on their needs. Just do it themselves instead of relying on agencies. And these people want a self-hosted version. They don't want to, if they can pay $20 more a month and not have to deal with the headaches of fine-tuning everything like a developer and touching code, they'll do it. Most of them just want something that works today that they can start working with today.
The only problem with that group of people is one thing that they do not understand and they do not do it well is the security side of having a WordPress website. So as somebody who's in the security space, as much as I am, I look at sites that DIY, do-it-yourself people do, and they're usually 6 months out of date. They usually have vulnerabilities. They usually don't have proper backups. They're the ones that get hacked. And so, as I always say, it's okay to DIY your website, but you better get somebody who knows what they're doing to lock it down for you and set up all the security protocols, because security isn't just a case of throwing a plugin out there. It's finding a multi-layered approach to secure that website and to secure the business.
I don't know. I agree completely. And from what I've seen, you're one of the few people in this space who's highly capable of offering such a service. I myself don't know that much about security online, but I think we've just, been able to avoid it by just following all the best practices in terms of coding and the basic stuff at least. I'm sure we're going to talk about security more, and maybe we can take a look at my sites after this and see if there's anything I'm not doing well there. Pretty sure that you're going to have opinions on it.
So I tell you, and what they don't understand is the cost of removing a hack from a website sometimes is more than the development cost of the website itself, depending on how long it takes. I say that really nicely. I looked at one last week, and to get rid of the hack, and the client had no backup, no WebCare security plan, no WebCare, no nothing, and the plugins were all out of date by a year. And he wonders why he got hacked. And the time to remove that hack was about 7 hours. It was bad. Because the average website doesn't get one file hacked. It gets hundreds of files hacked. So what people need to realize is they need to think of stuff like that as protecting their long-term investment. And it's really hard to explain that.
But Do you think this would be better left alone to the hosting company? So my initial assumption, so, you know, off the top of my head right now, my assumption is that these people might be relying too much on their hosting companies to keep them safe. But it sounds to me like these hosting companies aren't necessarily doing the best possible job at this, right?
Well, the problem is if you're not, people are under the assumption that they go out and buy the cheapest shared hosting plan they can find, that they're going to get all the features of a Rolls-Royce automobile. And it just doesn't work that way. So you really pay for what you get. And I agree, things like backups, you can do at the hosting company level, but I'm not a fan of putting all my eggs in one basket. So for example, I do backups at a hosting level and at a site level because I like redundancy. And we've seen hosting companies have their backup servers hacked. So we've been that road. And I just think people need not to put all their business, especially if it's for a business, they don't need to put all their eggs in one basket. They need to spread the risk. And that's the biggest problem, I think.
Yeah, and it's such a difficult thing to think about, especially if you're just stepping into the space of building websites in general, or you know, you're a newbie when it comes to internet stuff. You've maybe had a business offline so far, and you just decided you're gonna DIY your own website. And until you've experienced firsthand or hear it from someone else, you might not even think about your site getting hacked. It's something you usually hear about on big big site publications or on the news, like this website got hacked and information leaked, and here's a peek at what we could find out. But you never think it's gonna happen to you, or it could happen to you. And in my humble opinion, because as I mentioned, I know almost nothing about security, especially online. Like I follow the simple best practices of having multiple backups and redundancy and unique passwords and not installing, stuff I download off the internet from sources I don't trust. But other than that, it's kind of limited to me.
That's about like 80% of it is just following the best practices and doing the right things. Mm-hmm. So now I wanted to kind of move on. You run a small plugin, what I call a niche plugin shop. Mm-hmm. What is your most popular plugin right now and why?
So in terms of active install counts, all three of them are on the same level of popularity. We've got Modular Image Gallery, Strong Testimonials, and Download Monitor. And all three of them are currently at the 100,000 active users, more or less. It's almost impossible to know exactly if we're like nearing 200,000 active users or we're like 1,001 active 1,000 users. I would say right now our most popular today product is Modular, but both Strong Testimonials and Download Monitor are, I think, have more potential. Not every website needs an image gallery, but almost every website needs a testimonial on their website, right?
I would agree.
Yeah. And for the Download Monitor, this one is in such an interesting space, at least for me. It allows you to protect your downloads, track file downloads, and it does a lot of stuff in the background to protect your files against them being found either in Google or so let's take this as a simple example. Let's say you're selling ebooks on your own website. After I've bought an ebook off of your site, I'm going to get a link to the file. And with a little bit of technical knowledge, I can actually find the exact URL of that file on your server. I can just share that URL with your friends, my friends. And, I paid once, but I might share it with 100 people or more. And in the past, people used to go like, here's a link to my file. Please don't share it with anyone else, right? And we just want to keep off of that and help people actually protect their files. And make sure they're safe. Like, if you've spent so much time and you've invested so much effort into building a product and you want to sell for money in exchange for money, you should have the right to, prohibit access. Only allow the people who've bought it actually get access to it. And it's just one of the things this plugin currently does, and it does it pretty well. And there's a lot more stuff coming that I'm actually super excited about.
Awesome. Can you share what's coming, or would you rather not at this point?
No, it's fine. I think I can share this with you. It's going to be publicly released anyway. So one of the first things we're releasing, it's going to be a tool that will watch over your files and log almost every hit against your file, but it's gonna detect when your files are being accessed by search engine bots, and it's gonna alert you. Obviously, this is gonna be a paid feature, right? And it's gonna alert you by email, like Googlebot found your product. Found your file. It might get indexed in Google. You might want to take action against us. Here's why we think it happened. And then we're going to be actively monitoring if any other plugin is messing with htaccess rules or the virtual robots.txt file, because there's a bunch of plugins out there that do this without leaving any trace. They just do it for their own sake and they never think, well, what happens when I do this, when I add these bunch of rules here? And we're going to be enforcing, like constantly watching and making sure that the rules that actually protect your files are always there and alert you anytime a plugin has made a change to those rules, and make sure like we can, you can even set force it to constantly re-add those rules. So even if a plugin came along, wiped the entire htaccess file and just added one rule that this plugin think it needs, will just be running in the background and every 5 minutes checking that file. And if we see it's changed and it's missing the rules, we know you need to have your files protected. We're just going to add those back.
That's a great idea.
Thank you. Yeah, I think so too. We're heading into the world of, ease of, as much as ease of use as possible for the end user, and delivering on our core promise, which is protecting your files.
And it's worth plug-in checking out. So I would encourage people to go check it out, because it actually will help you and protect those files. And that's the important thing. In terms of getting a hold of you, if somebody wants to reach out and talk to you, Christian, how's the best way?
So I've got a very basic website set up right now on christianr.io. And I've also got an email address that is hey with three ending y's at christianr.io. But otherwise, you can just reach me on Twitter at Christian Raber. So that's first name, last name on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. Usually my DMs are open on every social network I'm present. Just ping me and I'll reply as fast as possible. You can even go on any of our websites and just submit a support ticket and ask that, just mention that you want to talk to me and I'll take it over.
Yeah. Thanks for joining me today. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for having me on your show, and I highly appreciate it. I had a lot of fun today.
Thank you. A very special thank you to Kristen for joining me on this edition of the SDM Show. Thank you for listening to this edition of the SDM Show. The SDM Show is brought to you by Rob Cairns and Stunning Digital Marketing. For more information about Rob Cairns and Stunning Digital Marketing, go to stunningdigitalmarketing.info. From here, you can connect to us on social media, go to our website, and even go to the podcast to subscribe. This podcast is dedicated to my late father, Bruce Cairns. Dad, I miss you very much. Keep your feet on the ground. Keep reaching for the stars. Make your business succeed.